I was out of school that Thursday, Friday. My dad had dropped me off at the little C&D grocery where she was working that morning to get the car. And I drove to Miami, Oklahoma, which was about 15 miles away from Quapaw. And then I went shopping a little bit, and I came back by, stopped at the store, and told her I was going home. When I was in there, there was a man standing there at the pop case drinking a bottle of pop, and she was behind the counter. She called me to her and started whispering in my ear that she had ordered a portable dishwasher, that it was white in color. It was going to be delivered on Saturday, and how much it cost. In retrospect, I don't know why she whispered that to me in my ear. I'm still at a loss. I don't know. So I left and went home.
When you left, was that man still there?
Yes, he was still there.
Do you remember what he looked like?
I gave a very vague description of him. I didn't really pay that much attention to him. I know there was a red car parked there, and I had pulled up behind that car to go in and talk to her to let her know I was going home.
Did your mom seem concerned about anything? Now, that seems strange that she would whisper to you about a dish machine when she could have just said it out loud.
Right.
I wonder if that was some kind of a way that she was trying to communicate with you that she felt something was strange with this guy or something. Do you think that?
Well, after it all happened and I go back in my memories, and I don't know why she whispered that to me either. And I was thinking, how could that have been some kind of a message that something was wrong? I mean, to me, she did not seem particularly anxious or scared or anything, but it was strange that she called me up there to the counter. This guy is maybe 3 or 4 feet away from us, not white. He couldn't overhear some of it. So I don't know. I don't know the answer to that.
I'm guessing this guy wasn't a regular, because a small place like that, you probably got your regular customers that come in often for gas.
Right. Well, they didn't have gas there. It was just little things and beer and things like that.
I wonder if this guy was a regular or if he was just passing through. What do you think?
Yeah, I don't think he was a regular. I would think that most people, if they're going to get a bottle of pop, that they would get it and leave and drink it. Not that they would stand in there and drink it. That's my thinking on it.
That makes sense. Because he's standing there drinking it, you're thinking, okay, well, he's waiting on something.
Right.
Exactly. Otherwise, he would have just left.
I'm thinking whoever he was, probably the one who abducted her, would be my guess.
During my conversation with Michelle, I've learned that law enforcement had suggested to her that Carlene Myers was a possible suspect in her mother's homicide. A deadly killer, Myers had been on death row since 1998 at the Oklahoma State Penitentiary, where he would die from natural causes. Carl Myers was incarcerated for killing two women. Cindy Marzano and Sean Williams were the names of his two victims. I had asked Michelle if she could identify Myers as the man who was standing in the store with her mother.
I didn't look at him that much, so I couldn't say definitely that, yes, that's the man.
Welcome to the Catch My Killer podcast. Thank you for listening. My name is Mark. Since 2015, I've written a weekly column about unsolved homicides and true crime for the Claremont Sun newspaper in Ohio. Before I discuss this week's episode, I would like to ask for your support. I'm looking for listeners to help support the podcast by buying me one $5 cup of coffee every month. This will help cover costs associated with producing a successful podcast. If you can help, please visit catchmykiller.com and click on the donate link or on the buy me a coffee link. And if you cannot donate to the podcast, you can still help out by sharing these stories with your friends and family members through word of mouth and social media. I would also like to thank Diane Cielo for her contribution to my coffee fund this week. And that's enough of the coffee business. This week's story involved a 37-year-old Oklahoma woman named Tina Mae Duffel, who was murdered on October 17, 1974. She worked part-time at a convenience store in Quapaw, Oklahoma, where she was abducted, killed, and then dumped in a pond. Michelle Blank, Tina's daughter, still hopes that Oklahoma authorities will find out who killed her mother. She's frustrated because she has been told several times that the case is solvable, yet nearly 50 years have passed and she still has no answers. At the time of her mother's abduction, Michelle was just a teenager, and she was the last person to see her mother alive. Michelle had stopped by the convenience store to see her mother. While in the store, she noticed a tall man with dark hair drinking a soda. Little did Michelle know that the man she saw inside the store and another man would take her mother from the store and kill her. Another witness saw the two men driving away from the store in a red car. The witness observed Tina in the back seat and heard her crying for help. Unfortunately, help would never arrive as Tina's body would be found in a pond the next day. Her throat was slit and she had been stabbed in the back. Michelle believes a knife wound in her mother's back is from where the killer put a knife into her back as a way of forcing her into his car. Michelle has never recovered from the loss of her mother. She's experienced depression and profound sorrow as a result of her loss. The Oklahoma State Bureau of Investigation, or the OSBI, has looked into the case. Unfortunately, there are still no answers. However, there was a small break in the case. An individual who saw the composite drawings of the killers recognized one of them as a career criminal named Daniel Burns. Michelle passed this information on to the OSBI. She said that they did contact Burns in Texas, but she hasn't heard anything else about the tip. So it's unknown whether Burns had anything to do with this crime. In the meantime, he must be considered innocent of any wrongdoing. Another possible suspect was Carl Lee Myers, who had killed two women. One of the women was Cindy Marzano, while the other was Sean Williams. Eventually, Myers would die of natural causes in prison. Authorities spoke to him about Tina Duffel, but could not connect him to her death. Additionally, Michelle Duffel could never identify Myers as the man she saw in the store with her mother. I'm hopeful that someone will come forward, and I would hope that you would put yourself in my place and want to have some closure and justice for my mom's murder, Michelle had said to a local media source. Now on with the tragic death of Tina Mae Duffel, as told by her daughter, Michelle Blank.
My mom's name was Tina Mae Duffel. She was 5 feet tall, but you knew if she gave you that look that you better stop what you're doing and pay attention to what she wanted you to do or not do. She loved to fish. She liked to go driving around places, would even go to cemeteries, like white paper with a black crayon and put that over a tombstone to get it. And she saved those for quite a while. I'm not really sure why she got into that, but as a kid, I got to tag along and thought it was pretty interesting to do that. She used to work at a doctor's office and enjoyed that work. 4 or 5 years after that, worked part-time at the Quapaw Post Office. And then more recently, just before her death, she worked at a little off-the-beaten-path store called the C&D Grocery. She was a great mother. She and I were very close. I look back now and know she had her own issues with depression, and how she dealt with that was not always positive. She and I pretty much, you know, did almost everything together. Of course, when she started work, that sort of threw a kink in being a stay-at-home mom, so I had to adjust to that. I have one older brother, and he was able to drive and go do things when he wasn't home, so I was stuck there, but when she was going places that it was okay for me to go, then I was there. And she was the second child, the only daughter out of 6 kids. So I had 5 uncles. And I was closer to a couple of them more than the rest. but we would often go, you know, visit her family and usually had a pretty good time. My mom, her parents, and my uncles would visit and always enjoyed being around each other. About a few weeks before her death, that she seemed to get more protective of me, and I didn't know why, but I just went along with it. And so on October 17th, 1974, that was the day that my life changed. We were on student holiday for parent-teacher conferences. So I was out of school that Thursday, Friday. My dad had dropped me off at the little C&D grocery where she was working that morning to get the car. And I drove to Miami, Oklahoma, which was about 15 miles away from Quapaw. And then I went shopping a little bit, and I came back by, stopped at the store, and told her I was going home. When I was in there, there was a man standing there at the pop case drinking a bottle of pop, and she was behind the counter. She called me to her and started whispering in my ear that she had ordered a portable dishwasher, that it was white in color, it was going to be delivered on Saturday, and how much it cost. In retrospect, I don't know why she whispered that to me in my ear. I'm still at a loss. I don't know. So I left and went home.
When you left, was that man still there?
Yes, he was still there.
Do you remember what he looked like?
I gave a very vague description of him. I didn't really pay that much attention to him. I know there was a red car parked there, and I had pulled up behind that car to go in and talk to her to let her know I was going home.
Did your mom seem concerned about anything? Now, that seems strange that she would whisper you about a dish machine when she could have just said it out loud.
Right.
I wonder if that was some kind of a way that she was trying to communicate with you that she felt something was strange with this guy or something. Do you think that?
Well, after it all happened and I go back in my memories, and I don't know why she whispered that to me either. And I was thinking, how could that have been some kind of a message that something was wrong? I mean, to me, she did not seem particularly anxious or scared or anything, but it was strange that she called me up there to the counter. This guy is maybe 3 or 4 feet away from us, not white. He couldn't overhear some of it. So I don't know. I don't know the answer to that.
I'm guessing this guy wasn't a regular, because a small place like that, you probably got your regular customers that come in often for gas.
Right. Well, they didn't have gas there. It was just little things and beer and things like that.
I wonder if this guy was a regular or if he was just passing through. What do you think?
Yeah, I don't think he was a regular. I would think that most people, if they're going to get a bottle of pop, that they would get it and leave and drink it. Not that they would stand in there and drink it. That's my thinking on it.
That makes sense. Because he's standing there drinking it, you're thinking, okay, well, he's waiting on something.
Right.
Exactly. Otherwise, he would have just left.
I'm thinking whoever he was, probably the one who abducted her, would be my guess.
During my conversation with Michelle, I've learned that law enforcement had suggested to her that Carlene Myers was a possible suspect in her mother's homicide, a deadly killer. Myers had been on death row since 1998 at the Oklahoma State Penitentiary, where he would die from natural causes. Carl Myers was incarcerated for killing two women. Cindy Marzano and Sean Williams were the names of his two victims. I had asked Michelle if she could identify Myers as the man who was standing in the store with her mother.
I didn't look at him that much, so I couldn't say definitely that, yes, that's the man. Later on, there's a witness that came forward, which we did not know about until the first grand jury. But she gave a description of two men, and the one heavyset, dark-haired guy, I don't think those composites really pointed me toward Carl Myers. That was just a big question mark.
What was the extent of the questioning? Because you were probably one of the last people to be seen alive, that seen your mom that while she was alive. when you spoke to the police or the person that saw her killer, did the police get a sketch from you? How much did they discuss this with you? Or did they just not even really talk to you?
It was the sheriff's department that came, Ottawa County Sheriff's Department. I had gone home, and then a lady called me asking for my mom. And I said she was at work. And then the more I thought about it, the woman's voice sounded like the other woman that worked at that store sometimes. So I called back and asked for my mom. And she said, "Is this Michelle?" And I said, "Yes." She said, "Well, your mother is missing." So I quickly went back up to the store. The sheriff's people pulled me back behind the counter in another, like a storage room. I told them about the guy that was standing in there. They asked me what he looked like. I could only give just a, you know, probably about 6 feet tall, had dark black hair. He's standing there drinking a bottle of pop. And what my mom had whispered in my ear, that it was a red car. But again, I didn't pay that much attention. And that's pretty much all they asked.
Did they make a composite sketch off what you said?
No, it came off of a woman saw, she was getting ready to leave her house. This would be like across the Neosho River where she lived. But she said she was getting ready to leave and they had a gravel driveway. So as she's leaving, this red car is coming toward her. And so if they saw her coming out, they just turned around and out on the road past her. And she said, as they were passing her, there was a woman in the back seat screaming, "Help me, they're going to kill me." So she's the one who gave the composite. And she turned that in that day or the following day. But we didn't know about it until the first grand jury, which was like in February or so of 75.
So you're telling me that there was a witness who saw that guy driving his red vehicle and your mom was in the back seat of the car screaming for help?
There were two men.
There were two.
Yeah. Two. And so she gave a, you know, description of each one, and that the woman was in the back seat screaming, "Yeah, help me, they're going to kill me," as they're passing her on the road.
And she didn't get a plate or anything?
No, not to my knowledge.
So then after you found out your mom was missing, how did you feel? You must have been in shock when you got there and found out your mom had been abducted. Can you tell me about that?
When I got there, the business was still going on as usual. People were in and out buying stuff. I get there, I am in shock. I just talked to her, seen her. They narrowed it down time-wise that when I was in there, that was about 10 minutes before she was abducted, which probably meant that guy in there abducted her. And when they found her body, she had a small knife wound in her back, which they believe was used to get her to leave the store. Then my dad was called. He went into work early, so he came home and went to the store, and we were there for a bit. And then the sheriff's department said, "Well, we have what we need from you, and we'll certainly keep looking for her and following leads and that kind of thing." So we went home.
What was the motive? Do you know? Was it sexual assault? Was it robbery? Both?
They tried to say it was robbery, but the more likelihood is that she found out that they were probably passing drugs in and out of that store. And my mom was one not to just leave things alone. I don't know if she said that she was going to report them or what. We found out from the grand jury, the postmaster she worked with at the post office had testified that she had given him a letter and said, "Will you put this in the safe? And if anything unusual happens to me, this letter will explain who and why." And she picked that letter up about 2 weeks before her death.
What was in that letter?
Don't know. It was never found. Don't know. October 16th was our homecoming, and I played in the band. Barbara Pollard, teacher, was sitting up in the bleachers with the wife of our school principal. The following day, well, her body hadn't been found yet. My dad decided he wanted to admit my brother and me to the hospital, get us some rest, get him some space where he didn't have to worry about us. Anyway, my brother did not take that knockout shot, and I did. Well, come to find out, Barbara Pollard and her husband came to the hospital, and she was saying, if anyone saw me reading that letter, I could be next. But she would never admit it was that specific letter. She denied it. I don't know what you're talking about. It was a letter that your mom had written to the school board about a bus driver, my bus driver that didn't stop at stop signs. He just looked and kept going. Well, that bus driver happened to be the local cop as well. So anyway, the speculation is that drugs were probably going in and out of that house, that store. And I guess they felt threatened that she was going to expose it or something. I don't know how long before her death that she had actually written the letter. I don't know how long. The postmaster probably knows of how long he had it in the safe. I don't know that information. But he did say she picked it up and then she was killed. And unless it was Barbara Pollard who actually read it, no one knows what was in it.
So the postmaster said your mom wrote a letter, gave it to him to keep in the safe if anything happened to her. Then she came and retrieved it back.
Yeah, she worked at that post office, so she was an employee.
So she ended up coming, you're saying she ended up coming back and having him take it back out of the safe?
Yes, about 2 weeks before her death.
And nobody knows what that letter was about, or probably why she wanted it back.
I don't know. That's a big question mark.
And nobody ever read it then?
Not unless it was Barbara Pollard, who was at the hospital saying, if they saw me reading that letter, then I could be next. But then when I would send letters to her and her husband, would you please tell law enforcement what the letter said? You can do it anonymously, whatever. Would you please just do that? And they never did. And they're deceased now. But in light of that, this Barbara Pollard, their daughter was married to a cop from Lima, Oklahoma. And so after the grand juries and stuff, they all packed up, left the area and went to Wilburton, Oklahoma for a few years before they came back.
It sounds like you'll probably never get your answer about that letter.
Right. Yeah. I don't know if she showed it or she told her daughter and son-in-law what was in the letter. I don't even know where they are, but she would deny later on that the letter had anything to do with her death. It had to do with her making a complaint to the board about my bus driver not stopping at stop signs.
If that's the case, now it would seem odd that she would want it put in a safe.
I don't think it was that one. That particular letter, the type letter, was actually in her purse. And so...
You mean the one about the bus driver was in her purse?
Yes. And so the Pollards came out to our house the night of the first day that mom was missing, because her purse was left at the store. Her purse, her cigarette, and an open bottle of pop were behind the counter. So her purse had that letter in it about to the school board. Pollards came out. I showed them that letter that was in her purse, had to do with the bus driver. She looked at it. She said, no, this is not the letter. But then later on would deny reading any other kind of letter, that it was that one. I don't know. Chances are most people involved are probably deceased. It'd still be nice to know who it was and put some closure on it.
What was it like in town? It doesn't sound like you lived in a big town. What was the atmosphere like after your mother was abducted? Was it shock? Your mom have a lot of friends that were concerned? Was it a big story at the time?
It was a very big story. The town was barely 1,000 people. We lived out in the country about 3.5 miles out east of town. People started locking their doors and they never had before. They were asked questions and they may or may not give them any answers. People thought... I knew who did it because I gave that brief description of the guy in the car. And so we had to pack up and leave town for a couple of weeks. We went and stayed at my aunt's house because the fear was I knew who did it and they might come after me. But I didn't say I knew who did it. I just, you know, saw that there was a man in there. I gave a brief description in the car and that's all I knew. I didn't know anything more than that.
Do you remember your last conversation with your mom?
That's right. Her whispering in my ear about the dishwasher.
So those were the very last things that she discussed with you. And yes. That just seems so odd. How did you find out your mother was deceased?
Like I said, I took that shot and spent the night in the hospital. So the next morning, my great aunt sat with me through the night, but my dad and my uncle came to the hospital room. My uncle said, "Michelle, they found your aunt." "Well, she's dead." And then almost immediately, my dad said, "Are you ready to go home?" So I got dressed and we went home.
That was it? Just your mom's dead?
Basically, I went and stayed at a friend of mine for a few days after the home. They told her parents not to let me see any newspapers, but I asked to see them, so they let me. And that's how I found out where she was found. Her body was dumped in an old mining pond west of Pawpaw. And that whole story is strange, too. They had already searched the area, found nothing. So later, on the 18th, later in the morning or something, the local cop / bus driver, the south of town, open field, there's a bunch of little trees in that field. They found my mom, white, it's like a little poncho, but it's something she had knitted herself. So they found that within this bunch of trees. It had a blood spot in it. The local cop said, "I have a feeling if we go straight opposite of here where we found this, we will find her body." So three guys, all of them people we knew, went back out in that area. Harry Frazier is the one who actually found her body. As soon as they got there, he sent the other two on the other side of this pond and then almost immediately said, "I think I found her." Well, her body was in the mill pond, covered with tree limbs. It was October. It was close to 5 o'clock when they found her body, so the sun wasn't anywhere close to anything. He said he found her because the sun shone on her diamond ring and the glint caught his eye. Well, later on, his sons, the 12-year-old and 10-year-old, he said the 12-year-old killed his 10-year-old brother with a shotgun and then turned the shotgun on himself and killed himself. Harry Frazier then later on committed suicide, leaving a letter that he had nothing to do with my mom's murder and he did not kill his own sons, but he committed suicide.
I guess you won't ever know now, though, because he's gone. Yeah,
most of the people are.
Which I guess that's got to make it really difficult because you're not going to find any witnesses or anything, hardly, because 1974, that was almost 50 years ago. I imagine the person who committed the heinous act himself probably is no longer with us anyway. That person's probably deceased also, I would guess.
Interestingly, once I posted on the Oklahoma Cold Cases group, I actually got contacted by a couple of different women. One said that there was a second set of composites that came out later, and the witness said that those looked more like the composites of the guys, more so than the first ones that were done.
Michelle told me she was in contact with different Oklahoma cold case groups. According to her, a young girl saw the composite of the killers and thought she recognized one as her father. Michelle forwarded the tip to the OSBI.
So I told the OSBI agent about it, and this guy is actually in Texas, but I don't know if the OSBI guy is doing anything at all, really. They were offering rewards for cases that were not as old as my mom, so I requested they offer a $10,000 reward, and they agreed. So now there's a $10,000 reward for people coming forward that can solve the case. But I don't know, it just seems like the OSBI guy just isn't, you know, doing a lot of anything with it. The Tri-State Major Case Squad actually came in to look at it. The DA's investigator, Floyd Ingram, who's still alive, asked them to leave. They didn't need their help. And when I was working on my criminal justice degree, the Pittsburgh, Kansas police chief said, "We were quite certain if we had been able to stay on that case a couple more days, we would have had it solved." Well, the DA's investigator later became the sheriff for two terms. And one time when I asked this, you know, see Mom's file. It was in a little manila folder, maybe 5 or 10 sheets of paper in there. And even a piece of paper I gave him that showed my mom had left her life insurance money to my brother and me, I given that to them. It wasn't even in that manila folder. And then probably a couple of years or so before my dad's death in 2013, he found out or was told by an undersheriff that Floyd and the sheriff had asked them to take some boxes of evidence, whoever cases they were, and go dump them in the mine shaft. So I doubt that he even probably just asked questions and left it at that. But where the tire tracks where my mom was found, the ambulance drove over the tire tracks. They tried to make an impression of some footprints, and those were ruined. A few months before any of this happened, I'm with Mom, and we're driving home out of from Baxter Springs, Kansas. It's very close. We were like 5 miles or so from the Kansas border. And so we're driving home, and she looked in her rearview mirror, and she said, "It pays to watch your rearview mirror." I said, "Well, what are you talking about?" There's this large black colored car behind us. And so she made a quick turn and went down the road. And because she had a really small car, she was able to turn around pretty quickly. And so she got turned around again, but this car was following us. We were leaving that road and they were going down it. So we went on around the curve where that happened. And there used to be a bar there. So that car was parked at that bar. And I even wrote down the tag number, put it in the glove compartment. But before all this happened, I didn't think it was anything worth keeping at that point. But her comment was, "It pays to watch your rearview mirror."
So this car was definitely following you, though.
Yes. 2 men in it. Again, I didn't really look at them that closely. I wrote down the tag number, but then threw it away. They actually sent me to a hypnotherapist, and I came up with the number. But then was told, well, during the courthouse's renovation, these records were all put down in the basement in boxes, and many of them were ruined by a flood. And all of that was back then. It was just paper records, nothing on computers or anything. So they didn't even look to try to find if that tag number was somebody or not.
Yeah, this is very interesting. It just really sounds like there was no motive or major effort to solve this case.
And every time there's a new sheriff, they say, "We feel this is a solvable case." So they put it back out there in the newspapers and the news and stuff. Nothing ever happened. The VDOC Society, I had kept a newspaper article about the VDOC Society. Do you know who they are?
Yes, I'm familiar with them. Okay. Yes. They're out of Philadelphia.
Yeah. And so I contacted them, and they said, "We're really not supposed to talk to family members, but you know, go ahead and tell me what's going on." So they did send someone from Ottawa County Sheriff's Department, but someone who didn't really know a lot about the case. And the VDOC Society, I even asked, would it do any good to exhume her body for DNA? And they said, probably not, because it wasn't really done back then. And since her body had been in the water, it was unlikely that there'd be anything to show up for DNA. So it just sort of stalled there. They couldn't really pursue anything with what they were given. And then the OSBI, about 10 years ago, got some money for the cold cases. And so 2 agents came and talked to my dad and me, and then one of them and talked to me at my work, because I was where I was at the time. He was coming through there. He said, "I've been in with the OSBI and stuff for 20-some-odd years." He said he had never had a case with so many dead ends. That everything he followed, it was just a dead end. Nothing came of it.
It doesn't really sound like they really can do a whole lot. To me, it sounds like the only way you're getting answers is if somebody confessed on their deathbed. So no one has ever come up with a true motive for your mother's death.
Your mom died. It was more speculation that money was missing out of the cash register, and I don't know, some beer was missing or whatever. So they tried to say it was a robbery, but again, sort of speculation is it had drugs going in and out of that store, and she found out about it. And so then they started making threats, I would guess. They might have even threatened to harm me because she got really, I don't want you to go anywhere. You stay home. She chaperoned our homecoming dance the night before, and she'd never done anything like that before. And the letter that she had left at the postmaster and then picked it up. So
it sounds like if there was something that she knew, she probably didn't mm-hmm. want you to find out, because maybe you finding out could have led to something happening to you, and mm-hmm. she was protecting yeah. you. And that, right. that's what it sounds like to me. That's probably
yeah,
a possibility. What about your dad? When all this was going on, did she tell your dad? Did she talk to him about what she suspected, or did he ever say anything?
My mom and dad's marriage was one, and she actually had been having an affair with someone else who worked at the post office. Unfortunately, she got me where I would drop her off, meet this guy. She and I took a vacation, and he was there in the same motel area. So, like I said, my mom's stuff is not always in a good way. She and I went to his and his wife's house a couple of times. So he had built an outside building or something, so she went to look at that. He had told her his wife had chased him around their house before with a hatchet. He ended up in the hospital, and he thinks he was trying to poison him with rat poison. And he told my mom, you better carry something with you for protection. Well, she had a pair of scissors in her purse. And so they asked me, do you know why she was carrying scissors, and had to dig into all that. And they had to pretty much be subpoenaed to the grand jury or ordered to attend, and I don't know what they did or didn't say. But so the wife of this guy, her cousin, Carrie Frazier, who was the main one who said he saw her ring glinting with his son underwater, they were cousins. So the guy she's having an affair with, which she ended, wife was a cousin of the guy who found her body.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
That could be another angle, a jealous lover or something like that. There's, I mean, it sounds like there's just a few twists here and there on this case. Yeah. And it's just, but I guess if you knew for sure what the motive was, this sounds like a case mm-hmm. where the motive would tell you who did this to your mother.
Well, Carl Myers was interviewed by Cherokee County, Kansas sheriff, because he was charged with raping a 12-year-old girl, and there was a woman's body who was found. And so they went and talked to him about some of that, but also about mom's case. And then he would allude to it, or, well, if I were going to do something like that, here's what I'd do. But he would never say yes or no or whatever. And they didn't have anything to actually prove it.
You saw the killer, most likely. And it wasn't him then, was it?
I don't know.
You mean you couldn't remember if looking at Carl, you couldn't remember if that was the guy drinking the soda?
I could say about how tall he was, approximate weight, color of his hair, that kind of thing. But I did not look directly at him. I saw him standing there drinking pop. But I didn't look that closely at him for it to really register in my head. I couldn't give a composite of him if I had to. I just had generalities. But he was out of prison at that point and could have been him. And some information points towards him, but there's actually no proof to say, yes, that's who it was.
And I'm sure he's deceased by now as well, isn't he?
Yes, he died a couple of years ago on death row. So
tell me about, you refer to a grand jury. Was someone charged with killing your mother?
Well, there were several of us called as witnesses. I was, the postmaster was. Of course, they call up people for other things about the jail and stuff like that. There were two grand juries. So the first one, someone was a sister, my great aunt, her husband, his sister was on the first grand jury. And of course, we're not supposed to discuss any of it. But she said, we felt like some indictment should have been handed down, and none were. It's so weird. Here, there's all these different people involved, and this, and you don't know who to trust or who has answers and who doesn't, and they don't want to come forward.
When you said there was grand juries, what were the grand juries called for?
My dad asked for a grand jury. Of course, he had to get the signatures. And Floyd Ingram was running for sheriff at that point, and my dad got help getting him elected. So, you know, it's called, I guess, primarily to look at the jail setting and, you know, talk about that. But then if you get the signatures, anything can go forward. So we got enough signatures for them to look at the grand jury to call one. That is the time we found out that the woman across the river had seen a woman in this car screaming, "Help me, they're going to kill me," even though they had called it in either that same day or the following day to Homer Conway, the local person. We had never heard of it until the first grand jury.
So these grand juries were just called to take a look at information about your mom's case?
They were trying to gather information from me, the postmaster, the guy she had been having an affair with and his family, and then other people were subpoenaed for other things for the grand jury to look at.
How far apart were the grand juries? And did anything ever become of them?
I don't remember how far apart they were, a couple of years or so. But again, I don't know of anything coming out of that.
It doesn't sound like anything came out of either one of them.
That's how we found out she had written the letter, asked her postmaster to hang on to it. But that's all we know.
Well, it sounds like there's a lot going on with this. So, But over all the years, it's probably difficult, I'm sure, to figure anything out. So tell me about, you have a Facebook page for your mother?
I do.
Is that correct? Okay, what's that called?
Well, I've posted most stuff on recently, it would be the Oklahoma Cold Cases. Some of it's under my name. If there's anything, it's Michelle Duffel, D-U-F-E-L, blank, B-L-A-N-K.
But there's no specific website, Facebook page set up for this case. Is it?
No, like I said, I went in and made some posts that I sent to you on the Oklahoma Cold Cases group. That's where some of that is. That's how I got contacted by a couple of different people.
If anybody knows anything about what happened to your mother, who would they contact?
OSBI, whose phone number is 800-522-8017, or a TIPS at OSBI.OK.gov.
And the last question that I would have for you is, for anybody out there that's listening to this, if they know anything about what happened to your mother, what would you say to that person or persons?
I would say that all of us have mothers. You might not have a sister or a daughter, but all of us have mothers. And if you were in my shoes, trying to put some rest, some closure, some knowledge to her death and why it happened, and who is involved, I would do that for you if I knew anything. So I'm hoping that if you will contact the authorities and try to help me get this case solved.
And that concludes the story of Tina Mae Duffel. Do you know what happened to Tina? Her daughter, Michelle Blank, remains distraught over her mother's death. She doesn't know who killed her mother or why. Although it's been nearly 50 years since her mother was murdered, she realizes the killers may also be deceased by now, but she continues seeking answers. If you know anything about the death of Tina Mae Duffel, please contact the OSBI at 800-522-8017. I will also include this information in the story notes. And if you are a parent, law enforcement official, friend, or relative seeking justice for an unsolved homicide case, please visit my website and complete the contact form. You can also contact me through Facebook. Thank you for listening.